Hello, everyone. happy Sunday. I'm just giggling in agreement. I noticed that Dove just wrote, Cheryl can't help herself. She is love. That's perfect. So again, happy Sunday. And I think probably most of you know that I'm no longer doing Holy Spirit guides in this time frame. I'm now sharing from my journal and the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. And tonight I will be beginning with quote number 62 in the book. What I'm going to share with you now is a link to my journaling of quote 62. There you go. So you can just open that up. If somebody happens to be listening on the radio or recording later and you want to get to the journal, the address is RDA 7 Steps Journal, and the 7 is the digit, not the word. RDA, oh, no sound. Hold on 1 second.
Regina, did you know you're not on the mic, or maybe you think you are on the mic? Okay, she's going to go out and come back.
Okay, Pal Talk problems, going out and coming back into the room. Let's try this again. All right, can you hear me this time? Okay, good, good. So just some kind of a little technical problem. On my end, I had the mic, but apparently on your end, I didn't. So I had given you a link. I will give it to you again since you didn't hear what the link was. This is a link to my journal. Tonight I will begin with quote 62 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. So that is a link directly to my journaling of number 62. If anyone is listening on the radio or listening on a recording later and you want to get to the journal, you can just go to RDA 7, and that's the digit 7, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And then when you get there, you'll see on the menu bar where it says Step 1. You just click on Step 1, and then you'll click on C, which is numbers 51 to 75. And then from there, you'll click on number 62. Again, in the room, I've given you the link, so you can just click on that link. I see both Melissa and Clara have entered the room. So there's the link again. And Barbara just entered the room. So what I'll do is I'll do a moment of silence. And then after I do the moment of silence, I will give the link again for Barbara and anyone else who may enter the room in the next minute or so while we're being silent. So why don't we go ahead and just be still for a moment. Amen. All right, so here's the link again for Barbara. And I'm going to begin by reading from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. I'll start reading at quote number 62, which we're reading quotes now by Sri Nizar Gadada Maharaj. So here's the quote. Some of you, if you heard my last teaching on the seven steps, you may have heard that I experienced some resistance to some of Nisargadatta's quotes because they were so short. And I felt like it would be difficult to receive anything meaningful from such a short quote. But as I mentioned, that was resistance. You know, we have to make sure we don't believe our resistance. So that was resistance was seen, but then it needed to be put aside with trust that something absolutely perfect would be received if I just went ahead and did my contemplation and my practice with the seven steps as I did with the longer quotes. And it all worked out fine. But here we go. Quote number 62 from Sri Nizar Gadada Maharaj. My stand I take where nothing is. Words do not reach there, nor thoughts. Okay, so I'll just read that again. My stand I take where nothing is. Words do not reach there, nor thoughts. So... Barbara says size doesn't matter. Okay. If you look at number 62 in the journal, this is what came after some contemplation. Self-realization is conceptless. Self-realization is conceptless. Therefore, every concept believed is a block to self-realization. Again, I'm going to read Nisargadatta's quote. He said, "My stand I take where nothing is. Words do not reach there, nor thoughts." And so what came to me was, self-realization is conceptless. Therefore, every concept believed is a block to self-realization. That sounds like a pretty tall order to be conceptless. But it seems to me from where I sit now that this order is actually filled by what we would call grace, or by what the Course might call the Holy Spirit, or by what some people may call the higher self. It isn't for the ego to do this. It isn't for the little self to do this. While we are stuck with the perception of being a person, it seems to me, and please understand, I can only speak from my point of view, so if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. And I'm okay with that. But from my point of view, where I am now, it seems to me that the best I can do is notice the concepts that are believed and then realize that that's a mistake. I kind of have a process in my mind that seems to be a taking that back. I take that back. You know, like a concept may be believed very quickly, you know, a concept about, you know, Teddy, for example, you know, who Teddy is, what Teddy's like, you know, just from the experience of knowing Teddy. And then, of course, as we learn from A Course in Miracles, based on whatever my ideas are about Teddy, I expect Teddy in the future to be like Teddy in the past, because I think I know Teddy. Yeah, Melissa says she could give me a couple more thoughts about Teddy. Of course, she's closer to him now. The closer you get to someone, the more thoughts you can have about them, right? So I'm sure that's true. You know, you could say it's natural for the person to have these ideas. It's natural for the ego to have these ideas. But what power I seem to have even now, while still identified with the person, is I seem to have the power to take that back. So if I think that Teddy, you know, is something, XXX, then as soon as I notice that's what I think of Teddy or that's what I expect of Teddy, I can look at that and realize that's just an error thought. I have that much power now. So I may not have the power to be conceptless. The concepts show up. But I do have the power to take them back. Melissa says to Teddy, whoa, she's thinking of you, XXX. You guys are funny tonight. All right, so number 62. Self-realization is conceptless. Therefore, every concept believed is a block to self-realization. All right, so let's move on to number 63. If you're in number 62, if you just scroll down below the comment area and above the dark blue, the dark gray area, you'll see where it says number 63 in blue. Click on number 63, and that will take you to the next journal entry. For those who have entered the room since I shared the link, here is a copy of the link directly to number 63. Of course, before I read from the journal, I'm going to read the next really wordy Maharaj quote. Are you ready for this one? It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 whole words. So here we go. Number 63 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. The real is experienced in silence. The real is experienced in silence. All right, let's look at the journal. So I wrote, what is silence? It is conceptlessness. To become conceptless, observe the concepts that are present without feeding them, without adding to them, without giving belief to them. So that, in effect, is the process that I just described for you all. I said that right now, you know, in my current state of mind, my current state of identification, conceptless just isn't. There are concepts. But what I do seem to have is the power, you know, it's what the Course would call to choose again. I call it the power to take that back. To take that back. As soon as I notice I have ideas about Teddy, or Melissa, or Barbara, or Dove, or Cliff, or Cheryl, or Lynn, or Monica, or anyone, right? Clara, right? As soon as I notice I have a thought about who that person is and what I can expect to that person, of that person, maybe how I feel about that person. As soon as I notice a concept, I can take it back. That power I have now. And when I take it back, then what I am not doing is feeding it. Of course, I'm sure most of you have heard the Cherokee folk story, where the grandfather is telling the grandson a story about the two wolves. They call it the good wolf and the bad wolf, who are in a battle. And the grandson asks grandfather which wolf is going to win. And the grandfather says, the one you feed, right? The one you feed. So our purpose then is not to feed the ego. So when the concepts show up, we don't want to feed them with our attention. We don't want to add to them with more and more storyline. And we don't want to give belief to them. We may not have the power right now to stop them from showing up. But at least in my experience, I have the power to take them back. I have the power to not feed them with attention, not add to them, and not give belief to them. So what is silence? It is conceptlessness. To become conceptless, observe the concepts that are present without feeding them, without adding to them, without giving belief to them. So once again, we can scroll down to just above the dark gray area. Look on the left for the blue, number 64, and click on that. Now this Maharaj quote is a little longer. So quote number 64 by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. It's actually a brief conversation piece, which means there's a questioner and Nisargadatta. Here we are. The Maharaj says, "Remember facts. Forget opinions." And the questioner says, "What is a fact?" And the Maharaj says, "What is perceived in pure awareness, unaffected by desire and fear, is fact." So again, the Maharaj said, "Remember facts, forget opinions." And the questioner asked, "What is fact?" And the Maharaj answered, "What is perceived in pure awareness, unaffected by desire and fear, is fact." And so if you look at the journal now, at number 64, pure awareness is fact. All else is perception, blinded opinion. Realize, I do not know about anything that perception appears to report. Seek not to understand what perception appears to report. Ask only for awareness of self, awareness of pure awareness. So for now, I'm going to keep using my friend Teddy. And I'm going to throw in my friend Melissa and my friend Lynn. You know, if Teddy wasn't around, and Melissa and Lynn and I, with our different experiences of Teddy, that's why I picked on Melissa and Lynn. We each have different experiences of Teddy. I know Teddy a little better than Lynn does. Lynn's relationship with him is mostly an online relationship. I've had a little more closer in-person contact than Lynn has, and Melissa has had much more in-person contact than I have. So, you know, that would mean that we certainly have three different perspectives of Teddy. So if Teddy is not around, and Lynn and Melissa and I are around the table, let's say we're drinking something, margaritas, so we're getting a little chatty, and we start talking about Teddy. There's a very, very good chance that, you know, based on our different experiences with Teddy, we would not agree 100% on who Teddy was, what Teddy was like, what we could expect from Teddy. There would be some differences. And maybe if Lynn and I were sane enough in the ego way, not in the Holy Spirit way, maybe we would surrender to Melissa because she knows him best. And maybe we would say, "Okay, Melissa, you know him best. You must be right." But what this quote is saying is that's not true. Melissa's not right. Regina's not right. Lynn's not right. And if Teddy happened to burst into this party and start telling us for himself who he was as Teddy Poppy, Teddy's not right. Yeah, Melissa just wrote that right before I said it. Teddy's not even right. In fact, any idea of Teddy as a separate person is somehow distinguishable from Melissa, from Lynn, from Regina. All of those ideas are what is being called here perception-blinded opinion. Of course, when we went to school, we were taught what a fact is and what an opinion is. So a fact might be, he is a man. An opinion might be whether he's a nice man or not, right? One is fact and one is opinion. But here, even, of course, he is a man, is perception-blinded opinion. Anything but pure awareness. And pure awareness could also be referred to as formlessness. Anything but pure awareness is perception-blinded opinion. And again, the Maharaj said, Remember facts, forget opinions. This reminds me of in A Course in Miracles, you know, when it asks us to see the Christ in our brother. Completely different words, but I think the same idea. If we're truly seeing the Christ in our brother, then we are forgetting opinions. We're remembering only facts. So again, number 64 says, pure awareness is fact. All else is perception, blinded opinion. All else is perception, blinded opinion. That's something that we could all stick on our foreheads right there, because it's so easy to forget. There are some things that we think we know, right? Pure awareness is fact. All else is perception, blinded opinion. Realize I do not know about anything that perception appears to report. So maybe I think Teddy is nice because Teddy is always nice to me. And maybe someone else thinks Teddy is mean, you know, based on the way Teddy has been with them. But what this is saying, of course, is even that experience is totally irrelevant. That experience is perception-blinded opinion, even if I can get others to agree with me. See, he's being sweet right now to somebody. I don't know if it's me or Melissa, but he's being sweet. So maybe you could say, oh yeah, I saw Teddy being sweet. Even if you guys could agree with me and Melissa that Teddy is sweet, we're still wrong. We're still wrong. Our goal is to realize we do not know about anything that perception appears to report. Seek not to understand. Seek not to understand what perception appears to report. Ask only for awareness of self, awareness of pure awareness. The word that's coming to my mind now is renunciation. You know, there used to be people, maybe there still are people in India who perceive themselves as renunciates. In fact, I met a guy who perceived himself as a renunciate when I was in India, someone who gives up everything. And this is in a way asking us to do that, not necessarily in the way this renunciate that I met in India did, but more in the way the Buddha did, where the Buddha still ate, the Buddha still slept right after he discovered the middle way. But it's a renunciation of every belief about the world. That's what the Buddha did, right? Renunciation of every desire, of every fear, of every belief. Realize I do not know about anything that perception appears to report. Seek not to understand what perception appears to report. Seek not to understand. Sometimes there are things that it seems difficult. You know, maybe if Teddy's sitting here being sweet, and then all of a sudden, for no reason that any of us could understand, Teddy starts throwing out some pretty sharp lines. You know, what happened to Teddy? Did he misunderstand something that Regina said, or Melissa said, or Cheryl said something? Maybe he misunderstood those lips that she posted, you know? What happened to Teddy? Why did he go from being sweet to mean so quickly? You know, the mind wants to get in there. But notice this says, seek not to understand what perception appears to report. Don't even give it that much attention. Renunciate, right? Ask only for awareness of self, awareness of pure awareness. Really, this one thought is quite beautiful. We could probably spend a lot of time and do a lot of practice with this one thought alone. Sometimes it's almost too bad that these thoughts come so quickly, because even one can take us so far. I wonder if we really give them the attention that they deserve when, you know, in just a moment we'll be clicking on the next thought. But I'm sure that's why the directions to the seven steps to awakening ask us to read these things hundreds of times, so that we do give them the attention they deserve. So they become a part of our daily practice, so that we are able to be renunciates, so we're not trying to understand what happens, so that we are seeing that all of our concepts and thoughts, even those that seem to be based on experience, are merely perception-blinded opinion, and so that we will continue to pray only for awareness of self, awareness of pure awareness. All right, let's go down to number 65. Scrolling down to the left and clicking on number 65. And I will read from the book. Again, we have another meaty, wordy Nisargadatta Maharaj quote. Not a short one. So, in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 65. You must know your own true being as indomitable, fearless, ever victorious. Once you know with absolute certainty that nothing can trouble you but your own imagination, you come to disregard your desires and fears, concepts and ideas, and live by truth alone. All right, so I'll read that again. You must know your own true being as indomitable, fearless, ever victorious. Once you know with absolute certainty that nothing can trouble you but your own imagination, you come to disregard your desires and fears, concepts and ideas, and live by truth alone. So now if you'll look at the journal for number 65, this is what I wrote after contemplation. I know nothing can trouble me but my own imagination. Imagination troubles me when given regard value. Therefore, disregard thought desires, thought fears, concepts, interpretations, and character ideas. They are imagination. Although this imagination thought script may be present, it has no effects when it is not given regard value. So again, this is very similar to the first quote that we looked at tonight, number 62 and number 63, the two of them together. That again, right now in my experience, I cannot say that I am conceptless, right? I cannot say that my mind is silent. If I told you that, I would be lying. I don't see what good that would do. Nor do I seem to have the power to make that happen. But what I do have the power to do is to what I called take it back. The word that is being used here is disregard. I have the power to disregard what my mind says. Yeah, and Barbara is saying, regard value, hyphenated, as one word, regard value. If I am regarding my thoughts, which means if I am paying attention to my thoughts, I am valuing them. It may not be a conscious value, like if I was thinking about how much somebody gets on my nerves, right? This particular person just drives me up a wall, and I'm thinking about them all the time and how I can't stand, even the way they breathe. I may not say to you, I really value thinking about how much I hate that guy, because I don't have that conscious feeling that I love to think about how much I hate him, But if that is where I'm allowing my attention to go, well, then there is a regard value there. Whenever I am regarding a thought, giving my attention to it, I am also valuing it. So, intellectually, right? I know nothing can trouble me but my own imagination. That I know intellectually. That has been learned. Experientially, I notice that imagination troubles me when given regard value, which means when I pay attention to it. If somebody dumps something in my yard, my precious yard, and they, for some reason, they threw their trash in my yard. That troubles me only if I think about it Or dog poop. Yeah, somebody pooped. Somebody's dog poops in my yard. Yeah. That troubles me only if I think about it. Do you realize that I can notice a thought about the trash or a thought about the dog poop, disregard it, and still go out and pick up the trash and pick out the dog poop and be perfectly happy? So my imagination only troubles me when I give it regard, value. Therefore, since that is true, since it is true that imagination only troubles me when I give it regard, value, then my job is, and this is what A Course in Miracles calls forgiveness, by the way, my job is to disregard the thought desires that show up in my mind, to disregard the thought fears that show up in my mind, to disregard the concepts that appear in my mind, to disregard the interpretations, the stories that appear in my mind, and to disregard the character ideas, ideas about who I am, what I need to be happy, all of those defining ideas, not only about me, but about Teddy and Melissa and Lynn and Barb and Monica and, you know, Clara, all of these ideas about who they are, what they need, what they want, all these character ideas need to be disregarded. All of these things are imagination. Now, this imagination thought script may be present. These ideas may appear in the mind. But those ideas have no effects if they are not given regard, value. And again, my message tonight is that is a power we have. The Course calls this the power of decision. I may not have the power to keep the thoughts from appearing, but I do have the power to disregard them, to choose again, to take it back. All right, let's scroll down and to the left to click on number 66. And since Karen has joined us since the last time, I've given a link. I will share a link directly to number 66. Karen, if you want to click on it, you can. And then you can read along with us when I'm reading from the journal. Before I read number 66 from the journal, I'm going to read number 66 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. Okay, so this is a short Nisargadatta Maharaj quote. It is the earnestness that liberates and not the theory. Very simple. It is the earnestness that liberates and not the theory. So after contemplating this one, here is what I wrote. Without judgment, by the way, I think it's important that you know that I was able to look at myself and write this without judgment. Earnestness has been my weakness. The Course would call this vigilance. And some of you may perceive me to be very vigilant, and maybe, depending on how you look at it, I am. But at the same time, I am aware that that can be increased. I am aware that it's not 24/7. So earnestness has been my weakness. Therefore, I will to be more earnest. Do not let my present experience of happiness delay me from absolute earnestness. Now, again, this is my journal, so this is written for me primarily. But if you know me, then you know for the last 2 to 3 years, I have been very happy, very happy. You know that there are things that have happened that have not upset me, the most recent of which was the septic, you know, exploding into the basement. But there have been many things. I mean, you know, I couldn't even remember them all because I don't hold on to them in my head. I mean, there was money that was spent when Jasmine appeared to break her ankle, and then it turns out it wasn't even broken. That cost like $5,000, and it wasn't even really broken in the first place. You know, I mean, who knows? I had major car trouble for a while that cost a lot of money in the same summer. So there's that summer of lots of money going out the window. All the money I spent trying to get rid of the gophers, and yet they just kept coming back the next day. You know, and I don't remember everything, but there have been a lot of what you could call tests. things that have shown that I am genuinely happy now, because where clearly I would have been upset over much, much less, I just don't appear to get upset much anymore. I honestly average it off to be small upsets 2 or 3 times a year. That seems to be about where I'm at now. And there's something that comes along with that, or it could come along with that, and that's a relaxing of practice. Because at least for me in the beginning, practice was motivated by not being happy and wanting to be happy. And so, you know, when these huge fears were coming up in the beginning about, you know, leaving my job and not having money, practice was very vigilant. You know, when I was living with Laurent and there were these daily tests in our relationship, practice was very vigilant. But when happiness comes, really comes, it's a little easier to kind of, you know, what's the saying, set back on our laurels? Is that the saying? I don't even know what it means. But I get it, that it kind of means relax and not try so hard. And I know in my heart, again, I said I wrote this without judgment, without condemnation. There was no sense of beating up on myself. I know in my heart that that is not what's in my best interest, and that I don't need to go back to having pain in order to be motivated. I can be motivated in my present state of happiness. And in fact, I even know what that motivation is. And as we move forward in the journal, you will see it showing up a lot. Since I do not have pain to motivate me, and I certainly don't want to go back to having pain, to needing pain to motivate me, this other opportunity, yeah, desire, Cheryl has, she's with me, desire, or I was going to use the word devotion. I think I'm starting to use the word devotion more, but it's really the same. The more time I spend in devotion, in a loving, focused, heartfelt desire, devotion, the more I'm motivated. And so what I need to do now in my present state is I need to spend more time in devotion, which means less time, you know, being busy with other things, less time hanging out on Facebook, less time, you know, I'm not doing the counseling. I need to spend less time outwardly focused and more time heart focused, so that that devotion can just really kick it up a notch, so that I can be as earnest as I know I need to be, or as vigilant as I know I need to be. That's the new fire. Before pain was the fire, now devotion is the fire. And I know I can spend more time in devotion. I am spending more time in devotion than I was, but I know I can spend even more. There's some resistance, of course, that holds me back from taking every opportunity to be in devotion. So, earnestness has been my weakness. Therefore, I will to be more earnest. Do not let my present experience of happiness delay me from absolute earnestness. All right, if you are in the journal with me, you can scroll down to below the comment area, just above the dark gray area, and over to the left, and click on number 67. Kathy and some others have joined the room since I last gave a link, so I'm going to give you all a link directly to number 67. If you want to join us in the journal, you can just click on that. However, before I read from the journal, I'm going to read from the book, The 7 Steps to Awakening, quote number 67, which is a quote by Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And here it is. Oh, I love this one. Talk about devotion. My heart just went off with the first few words. I love this one. Here we go. Your sincerity will guide you. Devotion to the goal of freedom and perfection will make you abandon all theories and systems and live by wisdom, intelligence, and active love. Theories may be good as starting points, but must be abandoned. The sooner, the better. Cheryl says she loves this one too. Okay, let me read number 67 by Nisargadatta Maharaj again, and then we'll go to the journal. Your sincerity will guide you. Devotion, there's that word, devotion, to the goal of freedom and perfection will make you abandon all theories and systems and live by wisdom, intelligence, and active love. Theories may be good as starting points, but must be abandoned. The sooner, the better. All right, so if we look at the journal, number 67. Yeah, and Cheryl is mentioning that she says through Inner Ramana, which of course she's referring to the book, The Teachings of Inner Ramana. She says, I have come to love the word and the practice of devotion. And yes, that's one thing that Ramana emphasizes in The Teachings of Inner Ramana, is devotion. All right, so the journal, number 67. I can trust my sincerity to guide me. In fact, I want to stop there and tell you a story. There was a man that was visiting here last year for a couple of months. And he had recently been with some people that seemed to indicate to him that maybe he couldn't trust himself. Maybe he needed to, you know, kind of listen to them and obey them somewhat in order to awaken. And when he came here, he had left that place. But when he came here, you know, there was still this fear in his mind. And I remember it felt like the one thing that I really wanted to teach him, and I'm sure I said it to him many times, and when I say I wanted to teach him, I mean the heart wanted me to get this, make sure that he understood this, that he took this in, was the realization that his sincerity would guide him. He was very committed to awakening, very sincere, and he didn't need anything outside of him that went against his intuition. Everything that he needed and that would fit with his intuition would be provided because of the power of his sincerity. So I spent about 2 months with him, helping him to see that because he was so sincere about the goal of awakening, he had nothing to fear and nothing to worry about. Just to follow his intuition, trust himself, right? And everything would be fine. As Ramana used to say, it'll all work out in the end. So it's interesting that, you know, Nisargadatta is saying the same thing here. Your sincerity will guide you. And that's why I said it just really sets my heart on fire to hear this, because I know this is true. I know that if we are sincere about the goal of awakening, everything is provided. We don't need to fear for anything. So again, the journal number 67. I can trust my sincerity to guide me. I can trust my sincerity to tell me what is right for me to do and follow. Guidance is clearer and it is more consistently recognized when I feed sincerity through devotion. When I feed the thought script through interest, I am not focused on devotion. Stay with the devoted heart. Oh, and here we go, Ramana, and all else will take care of itself. So you can see that this is an assignment to myself. You can see that as I'm writing in this journal, I am talking to myself. I am teaching myself what I already know and what I know to be in my best interests now. You know, A Course in Miracles tells us that we do not know our own best interests, but when A Course in Miracles is speaking to us, it is speaking to us as someone who is highly attached to the ego as who I am. And when we are highly attached to the ego as who I am, we do not know our own best interests. But there comes a time, you know, after a certain amount of practice, I don't know how to define that, but there comes a time when we only need to be still a little bit. And what is in our own best interest becomes very clear. It never becomes clear in the noise of confusion and fear and desires. It's never clear there. then we don't know our own best interests. But a little bit of devotion, a little bit of devoted time, a little bit of stillness, a little bit of sitting with a book like the Seven Steps, and that knowledge that we have of our own best interests comes so clear. We don't need anyone else to tell us what we need to do or what's in our own best interest. We do know. So we can trust our sincerity to guide us. And in my case, right now, as I mentioned, since I seem to be done with pain as a motivator, thank God, devotion is the best motivator I have. So I feed sincerity through devotion. And as I take time each day to feed sincerity through devotion, very clear guidance comes through. And it is consistently recognized. And in fact, you can read it every morning as I'm writing in my journal. If you want to follow this journal, I'm sure you notice right there, there's a follow button. Every morning, my guidance comes through. There is no shortage of knowing what's in my own best interest right now. It is so clear. But if I get caught on some story, you know, if someone tells me what's happening in their life, and especially if they're asking me for help, this still remains one of my weaknesses, which is why I'm sure I am not counseling. My mind then wants to start thinking about their story, and my mind wants to think about what might be helpful to say to them or do for them. Then I am not focused on devotion in that moment. There's no feeling of devotion in my heart when that happens. And so my job is to cut that short. Say, wait a minute, there I go thinking about a story again, listening to the thought script with interest, and instead move to devotion. Go grab my iPad, open up my own journal, right? rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. Ask within what number I should start reading at. Go to that number and begin reading my own words. And let myself speak to me. Right? If I just stay with the devoted heart and do not get distracted by the stories, all else will take care of itself. I can trust my sincerity to guide me. I can trust my sincerity to tell me what is right for me to do and follow. Guidance is clearer, and it is more consistently recognized when I feed sincerity through devotion. When I feed the thought script through interest, I am not focused on devotion. Stay with the devoted heart, and all else will take care of itself. All right. And what you can do now is scroll down below the comment area, above the dark gray area to the left, and click on number 68. I don't think we have anyone new in the room, but I will go ahead and just post this again, just in case somebody hasn't clicked on the link yet and now they're becoming interested. There's the link to number 68. But first, of course, I need to read number 68 in the book. So this is Sri Nisargadatta Maharaj. And Barbara has written, "I think the great power of doing the seven steps is realizing your own inner wisdom," and I second that completely. All right, number 68. "There is no need to turn round and round in endless questioning. Find yourself, and everything will fall into its proper place." So it sounds very much like we were just talking about. Very much like, Ramana would say, it'll all work out in the end, right? Everything will fall into its proper place. So again, Nisargadatta said, "There is no need to turn round and round in endless questioning. Find yourself, and everything will fall into its proper place." So if we go to my journal then, number 68. Questions stop here now. I have no more interest in asking questions or in struggling to give answers. I am ready for the simplistic, the silent. One thing that happened to me, as I seem to be in this role that, I don't know, I guess I put myself in, where people were looking to me to answer questions. You know, what does this mean in the course? What can I do in this situation, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes I noticed, sometimes the answers just flowed. Not a problem. But sometimes I noticed a struggle to give an answer. You know, like maybe an answer flowed and the person came back and still didn't understand. And that's when the struggle would begin. Okay, how can I explain this to them? How can I get them to see, you know, what miscreation is? I quit. Completely. I am still willing, if someone asks a question, I am still willing to give a brief answer if it just flows. But I am no longer willing to be concerned about whether the answer was understood or accepted. I am no longer willing to struggle to try and make someone else understand. And in fact, later we'll find a journal entry that says something about really no one can learn from me. They can only learn from their own inner teacher. So questions stop here now. I have no more interest in asking questions myself or in struggling to give answers. I am ready for the simplistic, the silent. You can't be in the world of asking and answering questions and be in the world of silence too. Or at least I can't, where I'm at now. You know, maybe Muji is, I don't know. But I can't be. And there's no sense in pretending I can be. All right. We have 5 more minutes. Let's scroll down and to the left and click on number 69. And in the book, Nisargadatta Maharaj says at number 69, yours is a make-believe talk. All hangs on suppositions and assumptions. You speak with assurance about things you are not sure of. All right, again, because he really is talking to all of us here. Yours is a make-believe talk. All hangs on suppositions and assumptions. You speak with assurance about things you are not sure of. Well, one thing I've noticed in the last year, maybe, is that I do that. Not only me, but everyone. But, you know, we could be driving down the road and somebody could see something and say, oh, what's that? And immediately my mind and everyone else's mind imagines what that is. Oh, that's a, you know, that's a this, and this is what it's used for, and that's how they, and then we notice that our stories aren't the same. You know, maybe I think it's this, and someone else in the car thinks it's that. And neither one of us is noticing that we made up our answers, that our answers are based on supposition and assumption. That's make-believe talk. And in fact, if you start paying attention to this, you will be amazed at how many times, at least in a week, if not in a day, that you completely make stuff up and believe it while you're making it up. You're making up a story and believing your own story and telling it as if you know. So here's what I wrote in the journal at number 69. Speaking of that which I am not absolutely certain of stops here. I must remember that what I think I know based on perception is only blinded opinion. notice before speaking, the not knowingness in what is desiring to be said, and then do not say it. Now, even though this is number 69 and I'm now somewhere around number 273, I have not mastered this. I am more aware. I have not mastered this. These assumptions are so fast. You know, somebody might say something like, well, what's wrong with Jasmine? And before I know it, boom, my assumption story is out there as if it's a fact. This is what's wrong with Jasmine. Or anything like that. You know? And I notice that people ask questions like, you know, what is so-and-so over there thinking? And then somebody else gives an answer. We do that. My God. And you know what? It is such a habit. Again, this is what is called conditioning. And there will be a quote later about conditioning. Some of you may have already read it because I posted it on Facebook some time ago. But that's why this is not so easy to let go of. It is not so easy to stop using what Nisargadatta here is calling make-believe talk. But we can become more and more aware of our own make-believe talk, and we can start taking it back. And in fact, we're going to find another quote about taking it back. I remember the day I posted that quote, tons of people liked it because everybody saw the truth in it, you know, liked it on Facebook. But for now, let's just look at this again. Speaking of that which I am not absolutely certain of stops here. Now, that's an intention. And, you know, Peace Pilgrim once said the words she used were, it took a long time. This was in her experience. I don't know what long time means for her, but she says it took a long time sometimes for the living to catch up to the believing. So what is happening here is that the believing of this, and it's really more than believing, it's knowing that this is true, is already here. But sometimes it takes a long time before we're really going to be to the point where we're not speaking for our make-believe talk anymore. So we just keep trying, right? We don't judge ourselves. Yes, Melissa, we can just laugh about it. But we just keep trying. So this intention, this is not a, I will never do it again, because then if I say, starting now, I really will never do it again, then the next time I do it, I'm just going to judge myself. You know, like when you go on a diet and then you eat a cookie. I don't want to fall into that trap. So this is an intention. Speaking of that which I am not absolutely certain of stops here. I must remember that what I think I know based on perception is only blinded opinion, right? Notice, before speaking, if I can, the not knowingness in what is desiring to be said. I don't know what that person over there is thinking. I don't know what's wrong with Jasmine. And I do this more and more. Danielle and Jasmine can tell you, I frequently say I don't know, but I have not mastered this. Notice, before speaking, the not knowingness in what is desiring to be said, and then do not say it. All right, my time is up. I will be back tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will begin with number 70. All right, thank you everyone for putting up with me for an hour. Bye.